Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. It's awfully nice to have you with us. Today is September 6th. We are just a couple of days away, 5 days away from the anniversary of 9-11. 9-11-23, as you, 23 years, that's what I was going to point out about the 9-11 World Trade Center terrible accident and series of things that happened on that day. I want to point out some facts that you may not be familiar with, but the official number now stands at 2,977. That's how many people actually passed on from the attack on the World Trade Center on September 11th. Over 7,000 9-11 first responders and 9-11 survivors combined have passed away since 9-11 from their 9-11-related injuries. Now, 23 years later, many 9-11 first responders and survivors, like our guest today, are being diagnosed with illnesses such as cancer and respiratory disease every day. Many people, like our guest, were not diagnosed with health issues until 15 or 20 years after 9-11, which seems surprising. But at the present time, the 9-11 World Trade Center Health Program was set up to provide medical monitoring and treatment of World Trade Center-related health conditions. And today, there are 110,000 people enrolled in the program. And each 9-11 first responder and survivor's medical conditions have to be certified by the National Institute for Occupation Safety and Health. Our guest, Vincent Caprio, is the executive director of the NANO-BCA. It's an amazing program that he's involved in. And once a person's medical condition has been certified, when they're able to apply for compensation from the Victims Compensation Fund, it's a quite complex process requiring hundreds of hours in order to get certified to receive compensation. While legal guidance is provided, the medical certification process has to be done by themselves. Those Americans were not policemen, firemen, or EMTs. They were volunteers, just like he was, who didn't have that hierarchy to lean on. And Vincent explains, on the day of the attack, he remained at ground zero for 22 hours, volunteering to help. We're going to bring Vincent on and talk about that now, and then we're going to talk about what this great organization does, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, does for people who are suffering from injuries and health problems related to 9-11. Again, our guest is Vincent Caprio. He's based in Easton, Connecticut, and he's a wonderful person to talk to, and he knows his business. Vincent, nice to have you here. Tell me a little bit about what your experience was on 9-11. You stayed there for a long time after the event took place. Tell me about it. What was your experience?
Yes, and thank you so much for offering me the opportunity to talk about 9-11 on our 23rd anniversary of one of America's worst tragedies.
Yes.
So I was actually involved with a media company on 9-11, and I was attending a conference at the Marriott World Trade Center, which was next to the Twin Towers. So as I was walking into the building, I saw the first plane go over my head, and I looked up and thought, gee, that I've never seen a plane that low. And I walked into the conference, and people, you know, said to me, a plane just hit a tower. And then I went outside, and the second plane hit. So being that I had been trained in disasters and had that training, I decided to, you know, volunteer and help out the to get people over to triage and, you know, the people that were injured from as they came out of the towers. And
right.
with my, you know, extensive training, I felt, you know, I was there to serve. So I ended up, you know, staying. Obviously, it was a quite chaotic scene, a scene that's really never been shown in any documentary or appropriately. And I think it's because, you know, there hasn't been enough time for a real live documentary to be done as to what was really happening that day. So, you know, I ended up staying 22 hours, you know, helping people, you know, to triage and trying to help the policemen and the firemen and the EMTs. And I then went back to Ground Zero on September 14th, the day President Bush was there, and I began volunteering, and I volunteered 400 hours over the next 4 months. So, you know, I felt it was something I needed to do. I had I'm a graduate of Villanova University, and there were seven of my classmates from Villanova who had been killed in the 9/11 attacks. So I kind of had a connection, and I felt, you know, it was, I wanted to, you know, honor their passing by trying to help out here in one of the worst national crises we had since Pearl Harbor.
No question about that. I want to point out, you were decorated by Congress. You also got a certificate from the state of Connecticut stating that Vincent Caprio, in recognition of your heroic dedication to your fellow citizens as a survivor and a 9/11 first responder during the attack on the Twin Towers. So you did get some, you know, a nice award for
right,
your
right. And,
the
yes,
time,
and,
all
and,
the time you spent, a lot of time, which
right,
is great for you.
Right, so
no kidding.
Yes, and yes, in the state of Connecticut, they gave me that citation. And so after 9/11, I continued to, I went to the ceremony on the end of May 2002 when they, quote unquote, the United States government closed Ground Zero. So
yeah.
I was at that ceremony that day. And I began to, in 2002, I was on a plane to D.C. because I had done a lot of work as an advocate for science and engineering. I am the founder of the Nano Business Commercialization Association, www.nanobca.org, and we're a 501c3, and I'm the founder and executive director. So I was on my way to D.C., when I, you know, destiny happened that I sat in the plane next to Mary Fetchett, whose son, Brad, died in 9/11. And we, you know, struck up a conversation. And I then began trying to help Voices of 9/11, one of the leading charity for helping family members, survivors,
mm-hmm.
and first responders in regard to helping with mental health and teaching us about grief and hope. So I was with Mary, and I, being that I had been in the media industry, I said to Mary, we should have a conference. And she said, you know, I am a social worker, Vincent. I don't know much about that. I said, well, you know, I can call the Marriott, and I've had events there, and we should have a conference. So we had the inaugural conference. And so for many years, I supported Voices of 9/11, which is called Voices now. And you know, not ever thinking that I would become ill, but in 17 I got very sick, almost died, and in 18 I got thyroid cancer. So, you know, I went to the other side of the ledger. You know, I went from being a supporter, a person donating money to these causes, to now being, I became ill and I became a victim.
Absolutely.
So then I,
Let me ask a quick question. I know you're the executive director of Nano BCA. What does that stand for? Nano BCA.
Nano Business Commercialization Association. So it's a 501c3 dedicated to the science and technology of nanotechnology. So I've been doing that for 22 years. So that's Go ahead.
The other question is, you talk about Voices, an organization. You're a member of what is known as Voices Center for Resilience. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that the,
yes.
the correct
yes,
name for the organization? And,
yes.
and what
and
you guys do.
And that's the organization started by Mary and Frank Fetchit, whose son Brad, who was only 24, was in passed on from the attacks on the Twin Towers.
So tell me what that organization does.
That organization has a conference once a year down at the Marriott that's near Ground Zero, which I helped organize the first two, and it was my idea to do that, not ever thinking that I would be coming years later as a victim. But anyway, the Mary being a social worker, the entire corporate culture of her nonprofit is based, is helping family members, survivors, and first responders deal with the grief of 9/11 and having us all understand that there's hope. There's so much. Every survivor and every first responder I had ever met, including myself, has PTSD. We have PTSD, and Voices has webinars for us to talk about our issues. And she created this community for all of us. She's helped this organization that her and her husband have started has helped thousands of people. You know, it goes from helping the survivors and first responders like myself navigate through, you know, the complexity of getting into the 9/11 World Trade Center Health Program, you know, or trying to understand how to get involved, get into registered with the Victims Compensation Fund. So they've been at it since, you know, her son passed on, and they are just it's just a wonderful organization. So we're having the conference on the 9th and 10th in New York City, and you know there'll be all the discussions about, you know, the Victims Compensation Fund. The special master who runs the program will be there to give us updates, and then there will be representatives from the 9/11 health program to give us updates. So, you know, at present time, there's over 110,000 people that are registered with the 9/11 healthcare program.
Right.
And, you know, I have two master's degrees, and I had a lot of experience with our government. And it's from my my opinion that the United States government never thought about how many people would get ill. Like, I never thought I would get sick. and the amount of money that's been appropriated for the 9/11 healthcare program is not sufficient based on what our elected leaders thought, you know, 20 years ago and even 10 years ago. So we have to constantly make sure that, you know, our elected leaders and our public knows. As you said in the beginning of our call, 7,000 9/11 first responders and 9/11 survivors have passed on since 9/11 from respiratory and cancer and other illnesses. And, you know, this is a very underreported story in the media. I mean, every person in the media I speak with says, I didn't know that. Well, you know, everybody knows, you know, the names of even when I meet with a congressman or a senator and I mention the 7,000, their reaction is, that's, I didn't know that, Vincent.
Exactly.
So, you know, and the numbers just keep growing, you know, so we're at the 23rd anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Coming up. Yeah, in 5 days from now. Let me ask you a little bit about your own health. How difficult is it to get enrolled in the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, assistance program? What are you suffering from?
So I have been certified by NIOSH with cancer, respiratory disease, GERD. A sinus condition. I have certified with a blood disorder now, a pre-leukemia blood disorder, and then I'm certified in PTSD. So it took me, my first certification was in June of 2001, and that took me, I first applied to be it with the 9/11 healthcare program, and it took me from the time I got sick in 17, it took me 4 years to get a certification. And it's a lot of work because I know my file, which is digitalized, has over 5,000 pages of medical records. So wow. To get, I had gotten thyroid cancer. And to get certified in thyroid cancer, they have to then get all my medical records from the person that diagnosed it, from the surgeon that took out my thyroid, and then my endocrinologist. So you have three doctors you have to get all the information from, which then goes to NIOSH, and then NIOSH decides whether or not you should be certified in that condition so that the WTC 9/11 health program will pay for your ongoing treatment with your endocrinologist. Like, so once I got into the program, every quarter when I go to see my endocrinologist, the 9/11 healthcare program pays for it. I take Synthroid because I have no thyroid. Now they pay for it. So it takes thousands of hours. And, you know, I'm lucky because I'm highly educated and I actually am very linear. But, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of survivors that are still working and they just, and you know, say, you know, they're a mother and they have children. You know, it's very overwhelming. I was able to do this because my daughter had gone to college in 16 and it's just my wife and I at home. So, you know, I was able to, go through the system, but the system is very difficult. The one
and they have to pinpoint that your injury actually relates to 9/11, right? That's the difficult thing.
Yes. And they and I know with my thyroid cancer, as soon as I was diagnosed and the surgeon sat there with me, and she said, you know, there's no one has ever had cancer in your life. And then I said, do you think it's environmental? And then she said, yes. And then I said, you know, I was in 9/11. And she said, so you were in 9/11 and you inhaled all those chemicals? She said, I said, yes. She said, well, there's your answer.
How about that?
So, of course, when it goes to NIOSH, they read everything and they say, yes. Now, there are people, you know, so what's so important for survivors and first responders? You have your physical issues that you deal with, and you can take a pill and medication you're told to do. But then you have your PTSD. Now, the mental health aspect of this is as equally difficult to deal with as the physical. And it's so important for any 9/11 survivor or 9/11 first responder to go have therapy from a professional every 2 weeks. And once you're in the program and you're certified with PTSD, the government does pay for the World Trade Center Health Organization
program.
Does pay for therapy for your PTSD. And that's why I tell everyone that I meet that's a survivor or first responder, it's so important to see your health professional every 2 weeks. So important. And when
let me ask you a quick question here. Let me interrupt you. For somebody who might be listening, who may be involved like you were and may feel they have health issues related to 9/11, what do they have to do? Who do they go to apply to get into the NIOSH program? What advice do you have for them?
They probably should first email or call Voices so that we can direct them into what they should do and the steps they should take. The first step, the second step, the third step. And that's how we help people. So they really should take the step. Come on out, say you're a survivor, call Voices, set up an appointment with Voices, and we can help you navigate through this process.
Give me the website for Voices. Is it voicescenter.org? Is that their main website address?
I think it's just voices.org, isn't it?
No, I think it's voicescenter.org. I have.
Oh, okay, thanks. Thank you,
okay.
Sir.
Yeah. So if they go to that website, they will learn, number one, they'll find out who they can talk to give them information, but they'll learn what the process involves and who they have to, start contacting in order to get help. And as you say, it takes a long time. From when you first applied for medical help, how long did it take before they approved you and determined that you really were, qualified? How long a process was it?
Five years.
5 years. Wow. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's well worth it, right? Once you get approved, they pay for a lot,
because
don't they?
It's well worth it. Now, look, I did okay. I'm upper middle class, okay? So a lot of my expenses, like my therapy, I was paying for my own therapy before the government. Our government paid for it. So like a lot of people, you have to pay a lot of your medical expenses before you ever get certified. And that's really where a lot of the survivors run into problems. I mean, I've met survivors. They're not upper middle class like me. They're middle class people, and it's, difficult, for them to make the, you know, it's just very difficult. You know, it's like it, when I would go to have my blood tested, you know, it was, you know, they'd say, okay, here it's $40 for your blood test. If you keep getting your blood tested every month, there's $40 every month. You know, it's very difficult for, you know, a lot of these people. And they do, a lot of them just give up and throw up their hands and say, I just don't know what to do. And that's why we try to help them, you know, navigate the system. So once again, I've said this before, but when the state gave me the award for my heroism and bravery, I had it. It was done at St. Joseph's College in West Hartford, and they had it was an EMT conference, so they had me come up in front of 300 firemen and EMTs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And my biggest takeaway, because I looked out into the crowd and I said, look, thank you so much for thanking me for my service. I'm here to thank you for your service. But it's so important for all of you. I know all of you have PTSD. You do. And it doesn't make you less of a man or a woman by getting mental health every 2 weeks. It's right. So important. And, you know, dozens of people came up to me after the ceremony and said, you're right. And, you know, they told me, thanks for saying this, because there's always been a stigma amongst many of us first responders that, you know, you don't want to go, you don't want to go to talk to a mental health professional because it makes you weak, you know, and that's not true. It's okay. You need to talk to somebody when you have PTSD. My father, the reason why I was, you know, I committed to this service is that my father was a Korean War DAV, and he was in Walter Reed, and then he came out of Walter Reed, and then he went to work for the IRS, and he worked his whole career. His identical twin brother is a colonel, Colonel Dan Caprio, who's buried in Arlington, yeah. A Vietnam veteran. And both my uncle and my father, you know, were kind of raised where you don't talk about it, you know. And my father never talked about, very rarely, he never talked about Korea till he was dying.
Exactly.
But, you know, nowadays, you know, you have to get the therapy. You know, you have to meet with somebody. So, you know, that's really what my biggest takeaway from the conversation is. And then lastly, I think it's important. I was an adjunct professor at 3 universities. It's very important that we continue to explain what's happened to students and historically about 9/11. Because it only happened 23 years ago, it's actually not taught very much in high schools and colleges at present time. And I, you know, as time goes by, you know, it
gets more difficult.
Yeah. Right. Yes, sir.
Vincent, listen, we've run out of time. I just want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And anybody really who feels that they, you know, they might be suffering health issues that are related to 9/11, they should get in touch with the folks at voicescenter.org, voicescenter.org, which, of course, Vincent is one of the ones you could possibly talk to, who could give you help and advice on what to do to try and get help and get enrolled in the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health's program to help people who are suffering from health-related issues. Vincent Caprio, thank you for taking the time to be with us. It's been great having you as our guest today. All right?
Thank you very much for listening.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time. Until then, take care and bye for now.